My name is Carl Cox. The county is recording this hearing, and that recording will be available through the county. Today is August 19th, 2021. This is the matter of Z0230-21-MOD. It is an appeal of a denial of a modification request concerning an application to build a home along the Willamette Greenway. That application was approved, but there is a certain condition that is being appealed here. I'm going to make a brief statement for the record, and then I'm going to ask that the county provide a explanation of participation via Zoom. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing, which means two important things for those participating in the hearing. First, all of the criteria that can be used in reaching a decision have been identified in the staff report. Testimony, arguments, and evidence must be directed towards the criteria identified in the staff report or other relevant criteria found in the comprehensive plan or other land use regulation that the person believes applies to this decision. Accordingly, please direct your testimony to a relevant approval criteria. Second, failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision maker and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue may preclude appeal to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals on that issue. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designee to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Once final, this decision may be appealed to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. I'm going to state for the record, I've not received any ex parte contact in this matter. No one contacted me outside of today's proceedings to try to persuade me concerning a fact or an issue which will be present today. I've considered issues of bias or conflict of interest and have determined that I don't have any bias or conflicts in this matter. As I stated, the county is making a record. I did receive a large packet of exhibits, and I've had an opportunity to review online posted exhibits. I'm going to just ask both parties to affirm that they've had that same opportunity to review the exhibits that are posted online in this matter. I believe there was an addition to that today, an exhibit, is it 36, perhaps?
Yeah,
I saw that and I skimmed it as quickly as I could to make sure that I was at least familiar with it. But it arrived in my email minutes prior to this hearing. I was able to access it, though. All right. So I'm going to ask that the county provide an explanation for participation via Zoom. Please proceed.
Yeah, so I thought I had that document. I have to confess, I'm literally searching for that Zoom form for the
Well, let's let Ms. Reinhard provide that explanation and then we'll deal with it. Go ahead. Oh, you're right. It's Mr. Hanska. You would typically provide the explanation.
I am shooting this over to you right now, Steve.
Okay, thanks.
I apologize for putting you on the spot there, Darcy. You're both county to me, and either one of you is capable of providing the explanation for participation. So, but please proceed.
So do you have that, Steve?
I have it. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Okay, Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic. So this public hearing will be conducted virtually using the Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearing, which include the hearings officer, county staff, and the applicant, have both audio and video capability. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator. Audience members' video will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required by law. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the county website later today. There is a designated time during the hearing when it will be open for testimony. The hearings officer will make it clear when this is. If you want to provide testimony, you will. Utilize the raise hand feature. Attendees on PC and iPad, you have a raise hand button on the Zoom bar, top or bottom, depending on your device. When the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a little while. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it is time for you to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address when you begin. Once you have provided your testimony, your mic will be muted and your screen will be returned to normal. If the record is left open at the end of this hearing and you wish to submit additional written testimony, email written testimony to my email address, which most folks are familiar with, but it's stevehan@clackamas.us. So that's Steve, S-T-E-V-E, H as in Hannah, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, @clackamas.us. Or mail to the Clackamas County Planning and Zoning Division at 150 Beaver Creek Road, Oregon City, Oregon 97045. The staff contact email address is also available on the web page where you found the link for today's hearing. Testimony must be received by 4 p.m. on the day the record closes. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer's written decision. If you do not wish to testify but would like to receive the decision, you must provide your email or standard mailing address, either one, by email to the staff contact for the application, or two, by entering it in the Zoom chat function during the hearing. Thanks much.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to begin the hearing by asking the applicant, who is the appellant here, to present argument and evidence that the appellant wants me to consider in making a decision about this appeal of the county's determination.
Okay. Are we having any staff testimony first? I saw that Mr. Hanska submitted a PowerPoint presentation.
I'm perfectly amenable to having the county present first, and that is fine. And I'm very comfortable with that. Here, we're in the position of you're representing the appellant, and typically the appellant gets to make a statement concerning what is going to argue about, or the type of evidence that will be presented, or that I would hear. But I'm comfortable having the county begin by presenting a staff report, and then you can respond to that.
Okay, that I could do either way. I was just going to...
Mr. Hanska, is the county prepared to present its staff report? I did have an opportunity to see that PowerPoint.
Yes, it is.
Okay. We are...
Okay, so this is land use permit Z02301-21-MOD. It is an appeal of a denial of a modification of file number Z0527-20 and 528-20-R to reduce the setback from 150 feet from the mean low water level of the Willamette River to 100 feet. This is this is a location map. This is the subject property here. It's sort of a small rural residential neighborhood. The subject property itself is a vacant piece of property that apparently has been kind of like the only vacant property in the subject / neighborhood area for quite some time. So it's located in the Willamette River Greenway. Get this out of the way. Subject to section 705 of the Clackamas County Zoning and Development Ordinance, where new structures are to be sited between 100 to 150 feet from the mean low water level of the Willamette River. The original application proposed it to be roughly 120 feet from the river. Again, I've cited exhibits in here so they can be referred to as necessary going forward, or of course for the hearings officer's reference down the road. So under the original approval, that is being proposed to be modified under this application. The applicant was proposing a new home and a shop along with a dock, and the determination was that it should be sited the maximum 150 feet from the mean low water level, due largely to vegetation removal within the Willamette River Greenway buffer that was provided as evidence during the course of the review of those original application. There were some additional alleged issues provided by adjacent property owners. Those are part of the record. A violation was created to address the stream bank violations in terms of vegetation removal, and the applicant did indeed submit a stream buffer restoration plan. And according to photos, at least some of the mitigation has been planted, and there appears to also be irrigation in the area. Again, under this modification application, the applicant is proposing to reduce the setback from the initially approved 150 feet setback to 100 feet due to septic system location, design configuration issues and such, and due to driveway design. This is basically the original site plan that was proposed under the original applications. And you can see the 120-foot setback from the mean low water line that was originally proposed. This is basically a geo-reference drawing of the originally approved application. It adds some detail, some context to the site plan. It basically geo-referenced over the subject area. It gives you an idea, a little bit of a better idea of where the location of the house is situated relative to the river itself. You have approximately 70 feet until you get to a substantially steep bank, approximately 37-38% slope downward. And again, this is the area that was apparently largely cleared of vegetation and potentially destabilized. However, sir,
on your 70 feet to where?
Got it. Okay, essentially, effectively, this is the top of, it's a little bit difficult to see here, but this, first of all, these are contour lines. These are 2-foot contours, LIDAR contours, sloping downward this way, the purple. Number two, you have the applicant having identified the top of bank, seemingly very accurately. You then have from the top of bank prior to the roughly 37-38% downward slope, 70 feet upland, if my mouse will behave, to the closest point of the home to the river.
Okay, so which sighting of the home is this? Is this the original application at 120 feet, or is it the county's designation 150, or is it the new 100 that is being sought?
Right. So this was the original. Okay. This is the applicant's original site plan, geo-referenced over the site area, if you will. So it's just, which essentially just simply clarity. Anyway, so that's what this is. It's the original site plan from the original application.
Okay. So I'm a little confused about that. Can we go back?
Yeah, sure.
So I see what you're talking about the mean, the hashed line, and the mean water mark, and I understand what you're saying there. I see the line that you're drawing to the house, and you're saying that's 70 feet, but I thought that we were always talking about an application at 120 feet. What is the 70 feet that you're talking about here? Can you clarify that?
I can. The setback itself from the mean low water line under this originally proposed drawing is indeed 120 feet. I'm wondering if the, without my clutter, this will show you. Here's the original without the detail of the subsequent drawing. What's being shown here by the applicant is...
Top of bank. I'm sorry. I understand now. You drew it from the top of the bank.
Not so much that. I was just simply trying to illustrate the length as a feature of the Willamette River Greenway and the assessment of how you determine the buffer, which the applicant's representative made some findings on. There are findings related to slope. There are findings related to stability of soils and those kinds of things. And so it was really just for just an additional detail to illustrate that, yes, they originally proposed 120 feet from the ordinary low water line, but secondarily, by providing some detailed 2-foot LIDAR contour and also certainly recognizing that the applicant's identification of the top bank is accurate, to illustrate that the length from the proposed home site to the steep top to where the steepness of the site begins was 70 feet.
I understand.
Okay.
Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah. And there's some further conversation in some of the applicant's representatives' comments about, the width of the river there. The width, I have some additional materials that shows that the width of the river there actually narrows to approximately 700 feet upstream and downstream. It's 1,000 to 1,500. If you look at the floodplain, if you look at the hydraulic mapping for the area by FEMA, you've got water velocities slightly upstream that are over there. I haven't written down, but they're over 5.5 feet per second, which is where it begins to get fast. And though the model does not tell me the exact velocities at the subject site, because the river constricts further, you're going to likely get faster waters and potentially more erosion qualities of the stream as it moves downstream to that area. So that's probably more than we need to know right now, or ever. But here are some photos that were submitted that kind of show what happened to the stream bank. This is basically looking from the Willamette River upland to the bank at the water's edge with some identification of some erosion. And then you sort of have a stripped area here. This is the steep, as I say, approximately 35% bank. Again, if you were to go back to that other drawing, the proposed house initially was essentially 70 feet upland of the top of bank. This is the top of bank, as previously identified. Let's see. Okay, so this was basically going back to the original application relative to the issues regarding the potential destabilization of a 38% stream bank, whereby staff provided a drawing that effectively moved the home upland to what is roughly 150 feet. So this was not like precisely precise, but I worked with the applicants, the middle materials, and moved them around a bit within a GIS drawing to essentially illustrate as best as possible that the home site should be moved, in the opinion of staff, under those original applications, to 150 feet upland. So this is documented evidence of the applicant's restoration plan, which indeed and was submitted, and I believe it has been, planted. There's irrigation in place. The size of the, I mean, obviously it has a, I, I would expect it's maybe about 2 months old. So the extent to which the vegetation has had a chance to take hold and begin to provide some ecosystem services and some bank stabilization, especially, which is perhaps the most important issue in this case, it's probably not, it's just barely kind of started along that process, I would suspect. But nonetheless, they hired a firm. We see lots of work from this firm. They provided a complete and mitigation plan with plantings. You see, again, evidence of the plantings here. This is evidence of irrigation. These were provided by the consultant and or by the applicant. Okay, so this was the submittal by the applicant for this modification, which as labeled is said, is noting that this is a house sitting at 150 feet from the mean low water mark, from the mean low water line or mean low water mark as originally approved by staff. And then apparently the issue is that there's a gap according to this drawing, which is labeled to say that, that there's a gap between buildings to create turnaround design safety and space concerns. So this is the applicant's proposal for the modification to site it at 100 feet, apparently with some necessity to work with Canby Fire. I haven't heard anything from Canby Fire, but apparently the implication here is that there needs to be some kind of cooperation with Canby Fire for an it says it right here, I won't read this to you, but that water tender placement, those kinds of things. So basically the conclusion in a nutshell, quite frankly, and very simply, the staff, being me, simply stuck with the original approval based, like I say, largely on the potential destabilization of the stream bank through the vegetation removal, and also recognizing that the home was sited only 70 feet from a potentially destabilizing steep stream bank, and also recognizing that there's plenty of room to meet the maximum 150 feet. There is a little, the applicant has raised the issue of the Willamette River Greenway, when it refers to its buffer, includes the terminology of open space. The definition section of the zoning ordinance certainly is much narrower than that, and refers specifically to, basically, I have it on hand, but there's a difference. So in other words, the definition of open space in ZDO 202 does not basically reference the Willamette River Greenway. So the disagreement, or the potential, well, let's just call it a disagreement potentially, is that By saying that in the modification application that there was a reduction in open space, because the originally approved buffer was 150 feet, that 50 feet of difference between the currently approved 150 feet and the applicant's proposed modification of 50 feet, that 50 feet does not constitute open space. So that appears to be an issue that has been raised. And again, the Willamette River Greenway references, basically it calls it the buffer, the landscaped area, or the open space. And let's see if there's anything else. I guess I have it on here. So here's the definition of open space in the ZDO, land which has been dedicated in common ownership. So you're basically talking about a true, in this case for the definition, like a true open space tract, something you might see in a planned unit development. Often it's it can be done as a restricted development area at times also, as opposed to the Willamette River Greenway that makes reference to the maximum possible landscaped area, open space, or vegetation. While the modification criteria itself does not permit a reduction in approved open space. So staff's findings were that, well, the Greenway references open space, and technically the 150 feet was approved open space. The applicant is noting that, in fact, so go ahead and get back to that there. That indeed this reference to open space in the Willamette River Greenway ordinance does not basically comport with or is not consistent with the official definition of open space in the zoning and development ordinance. And so that, let me get back to my screen here. Let's see, stop the sharing. Okay, that, I'm sorry, the lights are off here in my, have mysteriously and ghost-like turned off. I'm going to go turn the lights back on in this room, and if you don't mind. Okay, thank you much. So that would conclude the presentation itself. Okay.
Do you have anything further to add before I provide the appellant an opportunity to
forward? So to the presentation itself, I don't think I have anything further to add at this point that I can, unless there's something that you would like me to add right now, I can't think of anything that I would add additionally at the moment.
What I'm going to ask is that the appellant move forward. The appellant should provide a rationale and evidence testimony in support of the appeal that it's made, and then I'll provide the county an opportunity to rebut that. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Cox, Mr. Hanska.
Good morning,
Ms. Renhard. My name is Fred Wilson. I'm with the Kellington Law Group. Our address is P.O. Box 159, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97034. And we represent Dean and Marlene Bergen, who are the applicants and the appellants in this case. If it's okay with you, Mr. Cox, what we'll do is I will sort of discuss the legal issues. And after that, Mr. and Mrs. Bergen will sort of explain how this all kind of came about. And finally, our expert, Mr. Gibbons, will discuss the factors about determining what the appropriate setback should be between 100 and 150 feet.
Perfect. And following your presentation, I'll have the county have an opportunity to provide any rebuttal or questions of that or your witness. And then I'll provide an open period for the members of the general public to make comments. I may provide an opportunity for the appellant or the county to rebut testimony or evidence presented by members of the public. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I apologize if I upset the process you wanted to go. Mr. Hanska, he did that PowerPoint a few days ago, so I didn't want to talk about that in case I didn't want to misconstrue his position in case it had changed since.
It doesn't make a difference to me.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So I think Mr. Hanska did a great job explaining sort of the background for this. So thank you, Mr. Hanska. Again, there was the original application that approved the house and the dock, but it imposed the maximum setback of 150 feet. And the ZDO is very clear that when you're determining what the setback is for structures, the house, that it's between 100 and 150 feet, and there's different factors you look at. And Mr. Hanska's decision put the maximum 150 feet in main part, and I think he explained that in his decision in the PowerPoint, because there had been the improper clearing of the really steep riverbank area, that first sort of 50 to 70 feet. And, you know, as a decision maker, that's completely understandable that you do that when, especially when you think somebody's done something they weren't supposed to do. You tend not to give them any benefits of the doubt or cut them any slack. So that's completely understandable. And to be fair to Mr. Hanska, I think he really only got sort of one side of the story from the neighbors who were opponents, who are really just worried about their views. And so I can completely understand why Mr. Hanska made the decision he made. And so as Mr. Bergen and Mr. and Mrs. Bergen explained, once they realized that their contractor had not done this properly, they went about getting the best people in there, Schott and Associates, they're expert wetland specialists. They do this kind of stuff all the time. And so they fixed it up really well. And I think the pictures we submitted show that it's in much better condition than it was before they bought the property, where there was all sorts of trash, tires, boats, invasive species. So, and they'll talk about that a little bit. So once they fixed it up, they filed the application for the modification to address the factors of how do we decide between 100 and 150 feet? Because the original decision didn't really do that. It just said, you know, you guys did stuff you weren't supposed to do, so I'm imposing the maximum setback. And so in the modification decision, the modification criteria, that's why it got denied. It never actually reached the dispositive issues of what the appropriate setbacks should be between 100 and 150 feet. It used sort of the procedural requirements of the modification procedure to say, no, this you don't get to get there, basically. There were three reasons in the modification decision that it was denied. One was that it was not consistent with the prior approval. Basically said, hey, the original decision was 150 feet. This one's for 100, so it's not consistent. You lose. Second was, it's not consistent with the current ordinance provisions. And that's really a requirement that in case the code changes in between the original decision and the modification decision, that you got to meet the new stuff. But here, nothing's changed. So if we could show that we deserve less than 150 feet setback, then we'd still be consistent with the current ordinances. And then finally, we had the reduced approved open space that Mr. Hanska was talking about. And so when we got that modification decision, we thought, well, okay, you know, maybe we need to just file a new application, because if that with a really strict narrow interpretation like that, you know, I guess you can't have a modification. But before we did that, Mr. Givens talked to Jennifer Hughes, the planning director, and asked, you know, really, what should we do here? And we submitted that letter. It's exhibit five, or emailed. That's exhibit five to our hearing memorandum.
I did review that.
Yeah. And just so you know, pretty much everything I'm saying today is included in our hearing memorandum and our supplemental memorandum. So I'm not throwing anything new in there that you know, you need to jot down really carefully or anything like that. It's all in our submissions. But she explained that, this actually is the way the modification appeal is the process to address those factors. I mean, she didn't say you meet them for sure, but she said, you know, this is the way to figure out, is it 100, is it 110, is it 120, 150, what is it? And so I don't want to put words in Mr. Hanska's mouth, but from his PowerPoint presentation today, it seems to me that he's not still relying on the inconsistent with the prior approval or inconsistent with the current ordinances part. He's just relying on the open space, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize if I'm getting that wrong, but that's what it seems like. And so I'll sort of, all our positions about the prior approval and consistent with the current ordinance, is that's all our hearing memorandum, so I won't repeat that because I don't think that's the county's position anymore. If there is a dispute about that, I think Ms. Hughes lays it out really well, and that would be what we would suggest that you go with. As for the open space, so 705.04, no, that's 1309.01C. That one, C6, talks about you can't, if you're doing a modification, you can't have a reduction in approved open space. And it's important to remember, this is just the pure modification ordinance. It's not specific to the Willamette River Greenway. It's for the entire county, any sort of modification. And, you know, it just says approved open space. And there's a ZDO definition of open space, and it's essentially common ownership, like in a subdivision or a PUD, right, or stuff that's been dedicated to the public. And that's clearly not what an issue here. And Mr. Hanska is saying, well, anyway, we've got this provision in the Willamette River Greenway provisions that talks about open space. So he's basically importing that into the modification. And I don't think that's the way to interpret it. First of all, I'm not even sure that that's what open space means in the Willamette River Greenway area, because it talks about vegetation, open space, and landscaped areas. And I think the grassy lawn area, that's more landscaped area than open space. But even if it is, when you're looking at the modification provisions, I think you use the ZDO definition of open space for that, because it's got to apply everywhere. And even if you look at the some of the other sections that aren't applicable here, but it talks about you can't do a modification that has more than 25% additional square footage or more than 25% more lot coverage. And so if open space means, you know, sort of just anything that's not covered, like a lawn or something, if you increase your lot coverage by, say, 20%, which would be allowed because it's less than 25%, you'd be coming up 20% of the lot, and that would be reducing 20% of your open space. So pretty clearly, the modification provision doesn't mean just any sort of uncovered space like that. And so I think when you look at the modification provision, you use the ZDO definition. And then finally, even if for some reason you get to import this open space requirement and that's actually what it means, I don't think this really reduces the open space. It's the exact same house. You're just sort of shifting it different places on the property. So for the Willamette River Greenway talks about open space between the river and the activity, but the modification doesn't say where the open space has to be. And so if you move the house like this, you know, you're covering up open space here, but you're opening it up over here. So there's actually no reduction in open space. But I don't think you need to get there. I think the clear proper interpretation is that you just use the ZDO 202 definition of open space. And so I think that gets us sort of over the procedural hurdles. So we actually get to, okay, what is the actual appropriate setback? And 705.04e specifically says that it's between 100 and 150 feet. And before we get into what this actually means, I think it's important to remember what it doesn't mean. This is not a variance. This is not an exception. This is not a situation where the setback is 150 feet and we're asking for some extraordinary reasons to make it less. The actual setback is somewhere between 100 and 150 feet. It's not like a normal residential lot where you have specific setbacks like 10 feet, 20 feet, because it's on the river. River has different conditions in different places. That's why you have a different setback depending on the different circumstances of the river. And I think that's the county's interpretation too. I don't understand Ms. Hughes or Mr. Hanska to be saying that it has to be 150 feet, that it gets to be somewhere between 100 and 150 feet, depending on the conditions. And so what I think there's a lot of testimony in this case that doesn't have anything to do with the actual relevant considerations. It's pretty clear, and we pointed this out, especially in our supplemental memorandum this morning, that the neighbors who are opposed to this, besides just not liking the Bergens, they also are worried about, they want to have views. And it's not even, I mean, they have views. They're right on the river. The Bergens property is not between them and is not between the neighbors and the river. They're to the side of them. They want to have sweeping 180 degree views of the river. There's nothing in the Willamette River Greenway provisions, and there's nothing in the ZDO anywhere else that says that that's a relevant consideration. Same for property values or fairness or anything like that. So a lot of that is just sort of red herring. Also, there's a lot of argument about whether or not they really can fit the septic system in or whether they really can have the turnarounds. And again, that's the reason that the Bergens want to put it where it is, because they've had this house designed. They had the architect pay for it. It's all, you know, spent a lot of money on that. That's the house they'd like to have. That's the reason they're moving. That's why they want it a little bit closer to the river so they can fit. But they don't, whether or not they're correct about the septic system or the turnaround, that's not one of the relevant considerations either. That's just sort of an explanation for why they're doing this. And so I don't think you need to get into who's right about the septic system or who's right about the fire turnaround. I mean, I think if you have to, we have the evidence in there that shows, I mean, they wouldn't be paying me all this money to come make this argument if they could fit it in with the 150 feet. So, but I think the evidence will show that that's the case. But again, it's just not a relevant consideration. So the only issue that I think the opponents have raised that could possibly be applicable is 705.04C. And that is the one that talks about the maximum landscaped area. It says, so just to quote, it says, the request will provide the maximum possible landscaped area, open space or vegetation between the activity and the river. The depth of this area need not exceed 150 feet. And if that was all there was, they might be right that, oh, okay, you have to do 150 feet. But we have subsection E that talks about, specifically says it's going to be between 100 and 150 feet. And it says you look at the various factors in 705.04D to determine what that setback is. And so if you take the applicant or the opponent's position that, oh, it's the maximum possible is 150, you have to have 150, that makes subsection E that specifically talks about structure setbacks meaningless, because if it always has to be 150 feet, why would you have something that says it's between 100 and 150? And they tried to make an argument in their most recent submissions that, oh, that's for the case when you wouldn't fit otherwise. But that's not right, because under subsection E, it says, specifically says, residential lots of record and water dependent uses unable to meet this requirement, that's the 100 to 150 feet, shall be exempt from the setback. So that takes care of the position, the circumstance when they can't fit the lot on, you know, say it's a really small lot. It's not saying that you have 150 feet unless you're prevented from fitting it in. You get to look at between 100 and 150 feet is how it works. There's all, you know, there's 100 ORS 174, 010, so don't omit what's been asserted, don't insert what's been omitted, give meaning to every provision if you can. And the only way to give meaning to all the provisions, subsection C and subsection E, is that you use all the factors to determine what the appropriate setback is between 100 and 150 feet. Once you determine that, you have to maximize between that activity and the river, so you don't put in a whole bunch of other stuff in between the house and the river, but it doesn't mean that you always have to have 150 feet. And so that turns us to how do you determine between 100 and 150 feet? The opponents make the argument that subsection D, sort of what we've been calling the five factors, well, that only applies to vegetation, doesn't apply to structure setbacks. And while that's what it does mention, if you look at subsection E, it says the setback shall be determined, this is between 100 and 150 feet, it shall be determined by evaluation of the criteria stated in subsection 705.04. That's not, I think that probably could be clearer, because it just says all of 705.04. And some of that stuff clearly doesn't have anything to do with structure setbacks, like the stuff about the docks in subsection G. Subsection B talks about public access to the river. That doesn't have anything to do with it. So I think what you have to do is you have to look at those factors and sort of apply them to a setback, structure setback. And so the five factors of subsection D, those are the only kind of things that sort of provide any sort of balancing test. And they sort of make sense, the way they make sense for vegetative setbacks, they also make sense for the structure setback. So the character, the use of the development, the width of the river, the steepness of the terrain, the type and stability of soil, and the type and density of the existing vegetation. So I think those are the things you look at. And I don't understand the county to say otherwise. It's just the opponents who are saying that. And so now we turn to those five factors. And for that, I'm going to, before we turn to the five factors, I'm going to have the Bergens explain sort of what got us up to here. And then after that, Mr. Givens can go through the five factors. So I'll turn it over to the Bergens, unless you have any questions for me, Mr. Cox.
No, I don't. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mr. Cox, should I go ahead and proceed?
Yes.
So I'm Dean Bergen. I've been working with Steve since the beginning of this project. I just wanted to give a little bit of a narrative for you about like how we got here. I've seen, just looking at the county website now, hundreds and hundreds of pages. So I don't I know it's a lot of work to kind of go through this. And I'd also like to thank Steve Hanuska. He's been fantastic actually working through this with us. He's very responsive. He's helped me along. He's given us guidance. So I do appreciate everything that the county has done so far. But Marlene and I just wanted to give you a little bit of background on how we got here, like I said. Just for me, I'm Dean Bergen. We've been Oregon City residents for 30 plus years, active members of our community. I was a baseball board member for a long time. So we're not people just coming in trying to create problems. We've been active members in the community for a long time. And I'd like to let Marlene just introduce herself as well, just so you can have her on the record, Carl.
Marlene, good morning.
Still there? She's actually traveling, I think, as I told you earlier. So.
Yeah. Hi, good morning. I'm Marlene Bergen, and I've been married to Dean for 30 years, and we've been dreaming about a retirement home on the water forever. I just recently retired after teaching for 32 years, and I'm just really excited to start building this dream home. Thank you for the opportunity to allow us to tell you how our story unfolds of what we've been doing and how we've been working really hard to try to make this dream a reality. So thank you.
Of course. Nice to meet you.
Well, thanks, Carl. I'll try to make this quick, and I can provide this narrative to Fred if it would be valuable written. But just to back up, we found this lot in March of 2020, right before COVID started. And we had been active boaters all of our lives. So we actually found the opportunity to own a piece of property in the Willamette. We were pretty surprised and felt blessed that we were able to kind of find something that we could fulfill our dreams, like Marlene said. We purchased the land in April, right after the whole COVID thing started, you know, hoping that we'd all come out of this and took a bit of a bet. We took a second mortgage on our home and purchased the property in April of 2020. That summer, we used the property kind of as a recreational property. We're active boaters. We used it quite a bit, but the property was in pretty bad shape. It had been abandoned forever. It was the last lot in a subdivision that was created in 1923. So you can probably imagine what existed there. We found, I think I removed 50 plus old tires from the property. There was actually a decrepit boat on the steep bank that we've been talking about that we have photos of. There was invasive ivy growing all over the bank and all up the trees. It was killing two of the cherry trees that were there, as well as invading all the cottonwoods that were there. There was concrete and old dock material all over the bank. So we decided that we wanted to try to clean that part of it up. And we made a big mistake. And we totally admitted that we didn't realize that all of that area, 150 foot in towards the river, was completely protected. We hired a local contractor from Canby, young guy. He probably didn't know the rules either. He just kind of left Canby Excavation to start his own company. And he came in and helped us kind of clean off the invasive species from the upper bank that was shown on the pictures, and then clean all the blackberry bushes and garbage and stuff from the other sides of the property. We also did some trimming on some of the trees, which we knew now realize was not, we shouldn't have done. The cottonwoods are a bit dangerous down there. We've had a lot fall off in the ice storm that we had to clean up. So we thought by cleaning it up, we were kind of doing the right thing. But to this point, we realized we weren't. So after that happened, we immediately hired Schott & Associates, as Fred talked about, at the recommendations from Rick. We met them out there, I think. Well, and let me back up a little bit. The actual activity happened in the summertime of 2020. By the time the application happened and the photos that were sent in, those were actually from January and February after the very high water that we had. They weren't
Photos are you referencing? There were lots of photos.
I think the ones that are in Steve's document specifically, the ones that were submitted by Mr. Nuremberg are the ones that were taken right after the high water event in January of 2021. So it was like
the ones showing the erosion and the stripped vegetation and the bare roots.
And that's what I'm saying, that those aren't really where it was at when we did it in the summer. It was after the high water event, or what those pictures are actually of. It was 6 months later. Does that make sense, Carl? And so, yes. And so the next part of that was, we needed to figure out.
You're saying this happened after the high water event, or is that, these are the photos that you're referencing, the ones that are on the screen now?
Correct. It's this lower section that's all, you know, that's all brown. That was okay. Actually the flood. That was actually the water reached, I think, 64, 65 feet. I mean, all the neighbors' docks were underwater. It was a pretty significant event that really caused this, because it didn't look like that after. I mean, all the trees were still there. They were all still green. There were some trees, as you can see, over to the right side. That was the area that was the biggest issue that our biologists recommended. And we planted, I think, 28 new trees in that area. So it has been completely reforested. So maybe back to just a couple other topics. So, you know, as part of this discussion about where to put the house, it's been a dilemma from us from the beginning. We hired Steve Humphreys. I mean, he's a well-known septic guy in the Clackamas County area to help us work through the issues around where the septic could actually go on the lot, because that was our biggest worry with building on the river. So Steve worked with the septic and planning department to get an approved septic field defined, which is at the beginning of the lot, as you'll see. And then we worked towards where the shop could go, the setback to where we had originally submitted at 120 feet to define the kind of footprint of where we could put the house. Excuse me. So this is, I hope I'm not jumping around too much, Carl, but
no, I'm following it.
Okay. So after all of that, we got the septic location done. We got all the restoration. We found a perfect home for the lot, as Marlene said. So it was designed to follow the contour of the river, kind of wraps around to the other house, so we wouldn't have any, bother the neighbor to the left. We traveled to Bend. We met with a home designer. We found the house that was built down there in Bend. We toured it with the owners, and then we spent the last year customizing it. So to Fred's point, we've spent countless hours and thousands of dollars to create this house that we thought would look really well on the lot. It would fit well for people coming up the river. It would look really, I think it will look very nice and be something that, you know, Oregon City and Canby can be proud of as part of the river community. I think it's going to look really nice. And I think for my neighbors, it's going to increase everybody's house value. So I'm really struggling with like the dilemmas of why they don't like that, what we're trying to do. In the fall, after we kind of found the house and everything, we started working with Rick Givens, who's here with us today, and he'll talk for a few minutes about, you know, submitting the initial proposal. And what we decided to do is submit the proposal with the dock and the house together. It saved a little money on the application fees, and it left like a consistent way to approach the county. So we submitted that on 12/31 with Rick's assistance. And that was where the original 120-foot setback was proposed. Now, I would tell you that 120-foot number was kind of our estimate because there wasn't a current survey of the property. So that first submission was kind of where we thought it was based upon just like physical measurements of things from the river. So after that was done, that's where we got the feedback, and Steve sent us a note, and we received the violation notice from the county. We got that on 222, which was 3 days after we got the notice that we had made this mistake. And we hired Kim hired Schott & Associates, and Kim before and I met on the property on 3/3. So within a week, we had Schott & Associates out there to work with us on the mediation plan. We bought, local plants, native plants from another local nursery called Bosque Dell Natives in West Lynn. We spent over $4,000 buying, I don't have the exact numbers, but probably 20 to 40 trees and hundreds of shrubs, and then had all those planted in the bank, lower bank, upper bank, and it was all the pictures that you saw. So we sent the aerial pictures of those to Steve and the violation officer, and they were approved as a proper remediation. We never met on site with the team just because of COVID, I think, at the time. So they thought the photographs that we sent in were sufficient. Next step that we did was when working with Steve, one of the things he wanted done was actually have a survey done of where the low water mark was. So we hired Centerline Concepts. So James Brown, he's the president out there. I know my son actually works for him. And he worked with him to survey where the actual low water mark was. So they actually had to get in a boat, go out in the water, figure out where 56 feet was, and then shoot it upland to where the actual, you know, levels are. We do. I think it's, Fred, it's probably something we submitted. The Centerline Concepts survey documents have already, I think they should be part of the plan. If not, I think they're in one of the documents that I saw. But so we figured out exactly where the setbacks were. And what we found is actually we were off by about 20 feet from where we thought. So some of the documents that Steve sent showed in our original application were actually off by 20 feet. So we've now adjusted, and I think Steve showed the overlay of the recent ones on top of the Centerline survey document that caused us even further problems with pushing the house back further towards the shop after we got the Centerline documents. And that's where we really realized that it wasn't going to work. The house that we had designed.
So just let me make sure that I understand what you're saying here. I understand that what you're saying is the original submissions with your application from with the 120 foot number correspond to what you actually found with the survey at 100 feet.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you look at, I think the easy marker on the drawings, it's very easy to see is there's a barn or red barn listed on the adjacent property. And the survey documents show that the edge of that, the back edge of it actually is at 100 feet. And that's where the original submission was. So it's okay. A nice marker to be able to kind of see.
So you're saying you haven't moved the house on your plans. You've moved the lot line for the low watermark or the line for the low watermark, not the lot line.
Correct. Yeah. So because of that, right, the movement of the line, the size of the house, and then the pushing of the house and the shop together, I was like, this is going to be really hard to navigate between the two. I talked to some friends of mine that are firemen, and they said, you know, you should look into what the fire requirements are. So I started with Camby and Mr. Bauman at Camby. He looked into it and he said, oh, it's even though you're an Oregon City address, you're actually serviced by Camby Fire. So I contacted Camby Fire and they said, hey, we have all this stuff on the internet. It's all online for Camby Fire. So I pulled the documents that I think are in the thing. And we started looking at the turnaround requirements and used that as part of our conversation about trying to move the house closer to the river. So we could do fire safety. There's no fire extinguishers in that area. So they were saying that typically my friend said, do you put a water tender, like if there's a fire event? So he said, try to make enough room so that we could actually operate if anything ever happened. And so that's part of what we submitted as a justification for kind of moving the line. So that gets us all the way down to like, why, right? Why did we want to try to move the house closer to the river? It's to give us the space to let us retain the house that we've already designed, meet the needs of the septic field and the shop that we've already kind of gotten ready for. I mean, all the engineering is completed for the house. We're ready for permit, are ready to submit for permits now. And so if we can't kind of figure out how to get some space, and we're probably back to ground zero and starting again to try to find a design a new house. So the only other, the next thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, Carl, is the input from the neighbors, if you think that's appropriate.
I do understand that it's natural to want to rebut statements that are made by neighbors that are in opposition to your plan. I've had an opportunity to read those letters and submissions. What I'm going to encourage you to do is use your time during the hearing to stick to the issues that are relevant to the decision criteria.
Okay. I guess as stated by Rick, I don't think this is variant to the for your decision, but I think the primary issue here that the neighbors have brought are a view access problem. The neighbor to the south has been very vocal about the impact that us purchasing that have on his lot. And I think we can let them speak, but at the end of the day, most of the complaints that have been instigated are from that neighbor, and most of them really aren't relevant to the case. So I'll just leave it at that, if that makes sense, Carl.
It does. Thank you.
And then just in closing, you know, I want to completely admit we made a mistake with what happened on the bank. We hired a professional to remediate it. We remediate it to that plan, and we plan to continue to do any work. The bank has no stability issues. I mean, it's been there for thousands of years. It hasn't moved if you look back at all the pictures forever. So I don't think there's any real erosion issues. Rick Evans can probably talk to that a little bit. But we don't think that we've made any permanent damage to the lot. It's actually better now than it ever has been. And so just in closing, you know, Marlene and I aren't crazy people. We're good people. We're active members of the community. We made a mistake. We think what we're trying to do is good for the neighborhood, the community. I think the river community will love to see the house. And we just appeal to you to approve our request.
Thank you, sir.
So with that, Fred, I'll turn it back to you, or are we going to have Rick make a couple?
We'd have Mr. Givens sort of talk about the five factors, if that's okay. Mr. Cox.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Cox.
Good morning.
Can I share my screen at all, or I would like to make a couple points using it if I can. If not, that's okay. I'll do that. Can you see the site plan that I'm moving my cursor around here now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I've emailed a copy of this to both Steve and Darcy, so you'll have it for the record. Just to get to a couple of points before I dive into the five factors, the issue of a turnaround, this location here for the house is complying with the staff approval of 150 feet. I want to show you how that impacts the ability to put a turnaround in here. Basically, this design for a hammerhead turnaround is fire district and county standard for what the turnaround would look like. This basically, you have a 12-foot driveway lane, and you have to have a 20-foot, and then there are certain prescribed distances and radii that you have to use. And so you see that coming in here, it would be very close to the shop here, not giving much clearance at all. Oh, great. Come back to your screen. And then that it actually would bump into the house if it were located at that location. There was some evidence presented by opponents saying, well, you don't really have to do a turnaround. Well, you do. The Canby Fire District requires a 200-foot turnaround if you're more than 200 feet from the entry point. And the entry point from the highway is back here. It's about 275 feet to the corner of the garage. So
okay, Canby Fire. So you're counting as part of the entry for the Canby Fire. I see what you're talking about. It's a little bit obscured by the other video pictures, but I can see the roadway. Then I see a space between the roadway and the railroad tracks. So you're counting from the roadway across the roadway tracks to where? Is
to the actual entry point from the highway.
To the actual entry point. Okay.
And even measuring from here, which would be the edge of the little 16-foot private drive, but doesn't meet Canby Fire code for in terms of radii and those kinds of things. It's just a private driveway. But even measuring from here back to here, you're at 200 feet. So a turnaround is required. And there was also discussion about the drain field. Well, you need this area in here for a replacement. So this is the approved drain field. This is a replacement. So there's really not any room to do anything much different than what has been proposed here. And we would have a real problem maintaining 150 feet and meeting turnaround requirements. So those are all just statements that relate to, you know, why we're adamant that we need to look at reducing the setback. But as you know, the real requirements relate to the 150-foot to 100-foot to 150-foot criteria, which I'll pull up on my screen here. Yeah, maybe I won't. What happened to my... Just a second. I'm going to have to stop sharing for a minute, I think.
It's okay. I am always willing to be flexible about the interference, the technology. It can slow things down. For sure.
Somehow or other, Zoom seems to take command of my start bar here, and I'm going to have to go back here to try get that to show up. Here we go. Okay. try that. This is weird. Technology is great, except when it doesn't work to your advantage. So just a second here.
Exactly.
Where is that? Well, at any rate, if I can pull out this way. Okay, got it. So the five criteria set forth in 705.04D says basically, you know, that we looked at this range of five criteria in order to determine what the appropriate setback
is. You don't have an exhibit.
You want me to share that again here?
I can probably pull. Oh, there you go. Sorry. Yeah. I'll get out of the way now.
Okay. So D1, the character of the use of the development. Obviously, the issue is how to best preserve the character of the riverbank viewed from the river. That's what the intent of the Willamette River Greenway Plan is all about. Obviously, if you're putting industrial use, commercial use, something of that nature, it would have higher skyline, it would have potentially a greater need for a setback than a low intensity use. This is proposed use as a single family home in a rural residential farm forest 5-acre zone, which is very low intensity use. For that reason, there's no requirement to think about that you need the maximum setback, but rather that something less than that would be appropriate. Then there's the issue of the width of the river. I think there's some testimony offered by opponents that, well, it's at a choke point where it narrows. It does, but only in context to two rather wide stretches of the river. I think upstream, it's about 800 feet wide. And then downstream, it varies from 1,000 feet to 1,100, 1,200 feet wide. So it is at a point where there's a bend, there's a little constriction of the river. But this ordinance is written in the context of the entire stretch of the Greenway within Clackamas County. I looked at the width of the river up and down the stretch from the county line to the falls, basically. And if you look at the out on Wilsonville Road at the Yamhill County, Clackamas County line, the river is about 545 feet wide, narrows down to about 510 feet at Edmundston Road, roughly. The stretch from the county line all the way to Wilsonville, the unincorporated area of Clackamas County, varies from 550 to 650 feet. So almost exactly what we're talking about here. Go downstream a little ways below Charbonneau, where it becomes county again. Along Eilers Road, it's about 630, 680 feet. At the stretch, Malala River State Park, generally 550 to 600 feet. Going downstream farther to where the big Waddles Mansion is located there, it's about 555 feet wide. So throughout the length of the Clackamas County unincorporated area, subject to the provisions of this section of the code, the typical width of the river is 550 to 650 feet wide. That's from miles and miles of the river. So what's being discussed here is a stretch of the river that's 600 feet wide, which is right smack in the middle of what the typical width of the Willamette River is. So there's nothing unusual about it. As has been discussed, and I'll share, since we're talking about the next one, steepness of the terrain, I'll switch back to my map view here again. This is all surveyed information now. It's not a matter of conjecture. This line here, I don't know if you can see my cursor. This is the ordinary low water mark as surveyed by Centerline Concepts. And this is the bank of the river on the day that they were doing the surveying. From there, you've got a relatively steep, these contour lines, which you may or may not be able to see here.
I can see it.
1 foot intervals, goes up a relatively steep bank, levels off, and then goes up another bank. So this all happens within a distance of about 75 feet. So then you get to the top of the bank and you're in a big grassy area of lawn, essentially. And this line here is the 100 foot, excuse me, this line here is 100 feet from mean ordinary low water. This is the top of the bank. So between the top of the bank and the 100 foot setback line, we've got something on the order of about 40 feet of lawn. Switch back to the other thing if it will permit me. So there's nothing unusual about the width of the river. We've got a situation where the riverbank steps up in a couple of levels, a distance of about, as I recall, about 35, 40 feet of elevation gain from the river up to the building site. Maybe it's a little more than that, actually, now that I think about it. Say 50 feet. So that elevation gain provides some blocking of any views from the river, because it steps up relatively steeply, and if you're close to the bank, you're going to cut off in your line of sight by the bank itself. The steepness of the terrain all occurs within the first 75 feet. From there on, it's virtually level. So there's nothing, if you go from 158 feet to 100 feet, you're still within flat open lawn area. There's nothing about that happens in that reduced buffer width. There's no vegetation other than grass. There's no steepness of terrain. So there's nothing there that would argue the setback should be farther than 100 feet from the river. Then it talks about type and stability of soil. I looked at Dogami Bulletin 99, which has maps, geologic hazard maps of Clackamas County. What I'm showing you here is the width of the river, and I'll email this to Stephen Darcy as well. This is the point where the, approximately where the building site is. This speckled line here is floodplain. Other than that, there's no hazards at all indicated on the subject property. There's no signs of erosion. There's nothing on the property that would indicate there's any problem with building within that 100 foot setback. It's all flat lawn that's been there for years and years. And then the last thing is the type and density of existing vegetation. And again, obviously they did some clearing, but I think this photograph dates before the clearing. You can see that basically there's these trees here, there's trees here along this stretch, vegetation along the bank of the river. And this is now all restored riverbank along this steep area here. So there's nothing that happens, certainly at 100 feet, you're well set back from any vegetation that has anything to do with the river riparian zone of natural vegetation. So based on that, we conclude there is nothing about the five criteria that would indicate that anything more than 100 feet is necessary. The 100 foot setback, you know, you look at the aerial photograph, clearly, you know, the 100 foot line is here. It's not going to be out of character with the area. I'll just leave it at that. So we'd ask that you approve the requested 100 foot. Certainly 150 feet is well in excess of what is necessary to provide any protection of the Willamette River Greenway.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Any questions on any of that?
I don't. I was able to follow it very clearly. The exhibits I'll look for, there are two additional exhibits. So we'll look to receive those into the record. I think we're up to number 37 and 38. But the county can label those and put them on Excel.
Okay. I'll stop my share then. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think that concludes the applicant's presentation. Thank you, and unless there's any questions. Otherwise, we'll respond to anything that comes up from the rest of the testimony and rebuttal. So
well, first, I'd like to provide an opportunity for the county to ask any questions that it has of the appellant here and its presentation and witnesses, and any rebuttal that the county has concerning those statements that were made. So, Mr. Hanska, yes.
Got it. Sorry, I was just unmuting. So yeah, I appreciate the presentations by the applicant's representatives. I would say that in my knowledge of the evaluation of the site, A, I don't have intimate knowledge of the requirements or conditions relative to the fire department and the construction of the turnaround. Secondarily, I don't have specific and direct knowledge of the precise configuration, siting, capacity, et cetera, of the septic system. So it appears as though the applicant has outlined that stuff as additional detail. Number two, in terms of the, when you get down to the criteria of subsection D, which recognizing that these are really highly discretionary or can be at least construed, as a highly discretionary criteria to evaluate. The staff recognizes, as outlined by earlier by the applicant's representative, that most of the findings simply reiterated the observations of the removal of all the vegetation along the stream bank and potential destabilization of that steep bank, et cetera, without some additional, the word punished was used, it's okay, but, for the vegetation removal. I think that, I don't know if it was that the analysis in the staff report was looking at punishing. It was primarily a consideration of those factors of D that focused largely on basically the type and the density of the existing vegetation and the type and stability of the soil and the steepness of the terrain. Again, recognizing the discretionary element of these criteria, the steepness of the terrain on the one hand, as you move toward the river, gets very, very steep, as was well illustrated by Mr. Gibbons. You know, on the other hand, the home site itself is moved back some amount, and it looks like that amount has been refined by the more recent surveying onto basically a flat grassy strip. Again, it was also pointed out, I'm unaware of this at the time, that potentially some of the photos were taken during the course of a high water event. So to the extent that some of the erosion may have been natural, that may very well be the case. So whether or not the erosion was caused by vegetation removal or not, potentially there's been some clarification on that on the one hand or at the same time. So but anyway, just to flip back again. So again, however, the focus was again on those factors. And then I will also say that in terms of the width of the river was not agreed. The width of the river was not at the time discussed. I had sort of cursorily looked at that issue. And if you hang on here, just half a second. So what I would say in terms of the width of the river, and clearly Mr. Gibbons did a pretty, I'm just not going to show my, hang on here, sorry. So this is a hydraulic model for the Willamette River. The subject property is about 2,000 feet upstream of cross-section V. The width of cross-section V is about 665 feet. I believe that it's going to widen in the subject area to approximately 700 feet plus. You'll notice that water velocities there are like 10.3 feet per second, and not that that necessarily means anything, but I can tell you that 10.3 feet per second, that's fast for, and that's also unusually, not unusually, it's somewhat fast for the Willamette. That's generally fairly slower flowing than some of the other streams. So you got a lot of, like, this is during the 1% annual chance flood or the 100-year event. So you have some level of, you have some constricted width downstream, upstream, and then, you know, opening to approximately 700 feet with a velocities of 10 points. I cannot tell you what the velocities are exactly at the subject property. This also gives you, like, at least some rough comparison generally, which has been more or less echoed by Mr. Givens, in terms of how these widths varies. 700 feet, you know, I have not averaged these possibly. It's on the average narrower. If you continue, you can sort of take a look at, like, at this point also, as Mr. Givens noted, the widths themselves start narrowing down in terms of what I have available here in the flood insurance study. So, and then you can see the subject property here on the floodplain map. The cross-section to which I reference is down here. It's V. Again, you've got 10.5 feet per second of flood velocities during the 1% flood, which is, as I say, fairly fast waters. The precise behavior once they get to this place in terms of erosion, depths, et cetera, I don't have that information on hand. So it was a bit of a back of the envelope surmising of the whole river width issue. Let's see if I can just stop the share again. All right, well, I'll just leave it at that. I just had another little kind of just general demonstration of what I had. It was kind of a capture. This is our GIS system that sort of reflected those same approximate widths, the rough configuration of the river as you move up and downstream, and those kinds of things. But essentially, it was just perhaps continuing to elaborate, likely at this point, enough about the width itself. And so that would be just sort of my general, my take on the criteria. That would be my take on the criteria. Now, you know, in light of all that's been presented, I guess I would just sort of like to, what I'm doing here is essentially outlining what my analysis was on subsection D and could have been perhaps echoed more clearly or more in more depth rather than focusing primarily on the vegetation removal. Again, we have evidence of restoration work. Bosky, well, we don't, anyway, that's, you know, that's an obvious native plants nursery. That would be a type of vegetation that would be used in mitigation or restoration work along within a riparian area. So I'm trying to think if I missed anything else. You know, I guess, you know, it's just at the same time, since you're, there was a tremendous, what we are in the end here are talking about, if I could step back for just half a second, is roughly 50 feet of grassy strip. And with some substantially discretionary standards. I have no conclusions about that, except to say that within essentially the focus being roughly 50 feet of grassy strip, this did generate a tremendous amount of commentary from the outside. And so in the end, I've simply done my best to try to process the various sides of this from both the applicant and neighboring properties. And unless you have anything further that you would like me to say, I think that's my initial conclusion.
That's fine. Okay. I understand, sir. I'd like to provide an opportunity for members of the general public who are present. Please use the raise hand feature. I understand that several people are utilizing the same Zoom login, and please let the county know that that's the case when an additional hand is raised under the same name. When you are called upon, I'd like you to state your name and address for the record as well. That period's now open.
If you would like to provide testimony, please raise your hand. I have Sam Sen.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the neighbor of the Dinge on the north side. My address is 1060 South Main Street, Lebanon. And yeah, I put a concern because I share the access with Dinge on the property, and I will like to share my experience work with Dinge, what's going on the property. And on the beginning, Dinge bought his property and give me a call talking about I don't have the easement on the asset. Then we meet on the property and try to work it out, because when I bought the property and the old owner told me we don't need the easement, because this is the used to be, they call grandpa law. When I used that property for a long time, same exit, we don't need the easement. But when Dinge bought his lot and we tried working out for the easement, then I agree for that. And that's why we working out, and he tried to do look good on the exit, and he cut the tree and put some gravel on it and ask me for share those money. I agree for that and share for $5,000 on it. And on the later, and after that, he said he will give me the easement. He offered me like 33 square feet wide, about 50 square feet long. We'll build a gate over there. That's one the first time he offered me except for that. And later, and he tried to ask me to trim some tree by the river bend over there, and I agree for that. It's no problem. He trimmed the blackberry, and he removed my two small tree too. So, and he keep asking me for that another the viewpoint. Then that is when I talked to my lawyer, he said, no one can ask you for the viewpoint on my property, because he wants to guarantee not blocking his will. Because if I sign that will easement, that means I won't do anything on my property around from the top bend back to about 70 square foot.
Okay, I understand, and I'm not your attorney, and I'm not going to advise you at all on that. I understand what you're talking about is a view easement, and you have a dispute or a potential dispute with the Bergens as your neighbors that involving a view. But this is your opportunity to provide input concerning the placement of their home, and I'd like to redirect you to the criteria that we've talked about the type density of the vegetation, the issues that we're talking about here that involve that I'm going to base my decision on about whether the appeal of the modification request should be affirmed or denied. And I don't want you to spend your time during this discussion about a view easement that doesn't, frankly, have anything to do with my decision.
Yeah, I understand that, sir. But I just try to let you guys know what Sting try to do and what is the people try to do. Some people not look like that nice. On the beginning, I tried to nice be the neighbor like with Don on the other side, on my right-hand side, Bill. We try to all, you know, the good neighbor when you, you know, try to live over there.
Sure.
But look like he tried to ask him more like, you know, unfair, like something like that. Not like what he said.
Sorry you felt like you were treated unfairly. I did see in the approval criteria for the development that there were requirements for continuing the access to your property. That's what it appeared to me, but you'll have to seek your own counsel on that. I didn't see any, I'm not sure exactly the issue you're trying to communicate that really is about the modification request.
Yeah, for me, like my house is super, like 175 square feet mm-hmm. over there. So
okay.
Nobody like you build a house close by the river block our view or block any, because I have another view and another well set close by Dean's property.
Okay. So your assertion then is that your that the area is for what?
If he built a house close by that, I just worry about he's just bother me the water.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your input and thank you for attending the hearing. Is there another member of the general public that has their hand up?
Yes, I have Bill Kennemer.
I think you need to unmute yourself, Mr. Kennemer. Let's give him a minute. Not everyone's that familiar with the Zoom platform, and I want to be patient and give everyone an opportunity. There we go.
There we go.
Good morning, Mr. Kennemer.
Good morning. Thank you. For the record, my name is Bill or William M. Kennemer, and my address is 21041 South Highway 99E, Oregon City. And I appreciate this opportunity to testify. And I apologize for, I don't know what the technical difficulty was, but it's glad to have it remedied and was an upsetting moment. My wife and I are owners of property located as the second parcel to the north of the property under appeal to the hearings officer, and we are strongly opposed to the appeal. From our perspective, there are a broad range of concerns that lead to our request that the 150-foot setback requirement be maintained. While changing the setback to 100 feet instead of 150 would make a dramatic change in the applicant's view shed, it would also dramatically damage the two adjacent properties as well as ours. Essentially, the applicant's appeal, if granted, would significantly enhance their view at the significant expense of their neighbors' views. This is not right. And this is precisely one of the reasons there is the 150-foot setback requirement. Further, there is concern for open space. To use the 100 feet instead of the approved 150 would result in less open space. And I would note viewshed is one of the items considered in the determining of openings of open space. As Mr. Nuremberg's testimony will point out, His home and all three homes to the north have setbacks greater than 150 feet from the greenway. Further, the three houses below the applicant's property were built before the Willamette Greenway was created, and those three houses' views will be impacted by the applicant's property. Thus, unlike as mentioned in the appeal, there is no community precedent to violate the 150-foot setback requirement. Please note that these three neighbors oppose the appeal and have sent testimony and are here to testify as well. Early on, the purchase of the property by the applicants, there has been a disregard for rules and regulations. For example, even after a warning by neighbors, the greenway was seriously damaged, trees removed and trimmed excessively, vegetation removed, and a small trail to the river was enlarged to virtually a dirt road. All of this in the riparian area and greenway. Additionally, efforts of remediation have been made, but the summer heat and other factors have rendered that not very successful. For example, many of the newly replanted trees have died, and a number of those trees were planted close to the low summer water level, meaning if they do survive during now, they'll still be going underwater in the high water, and that makes their survival very unlikely. And the vegetation that was removed has resulted in significant erosion. You have those pictures that we've already seen. And I would note in this regard something that's very important, and that is this winter's water level were the lowest we've seen in 23 years of our living here on the river. So that erosion occurred under the least erosive circumstances that have occurred in the last 23 years. So I think that makes the stability of the bank a very central concern. Now, this erosion is also pertinent because such damage to the bank may not only cause the applicant's steep bank to slide and create instability for their property, but it often can lead to the erosion of neighboring properties. And I would note up about 3 miles at Head Park, a gigantic slide on the steep bank reminds us that clearing vegetation can create catastrophic damage. And that's why the vegetation of these banks is essential, and why at this point, their bank and surrounding banks are still in jeopardy. Having had difficulty assessing the county plan's access, it was only on August 17th that we learned of the 49-page legal document submitted on behalf of the applicants. Not being lawyers, it presents a daunting document, but it appears that the crux of the argument is that enforcing the 150-foot setback requirement is cast as some form of retaliation. Frankly, such a thesis is absurd. There simply is no retaliation in our belief that the 150-foot setback is legal and fair. Yes, Sherry and I feel the applicant's inappropriate degradation of the greenway, despite the advice from neighbors, was wrong. And we also feel that efforts at remediation are commendable, they are still not adequate, and they are not as successful as they need to be. But the 150-foot setback is about viewshed, property value, and environment and fairness. Those are the critical issues that are being subverted by these so-called retaliation accusations. Sherry and I know and understand that laws, ordinances, and regulations are about fairness, equity, and the greater good. These are the issues. We neighbors in supporting the legal setback of 150 feet are simply standing up for our personal and property rights. We have purchased land on the Willamette in significant measure for our viewshed. And that viewshed and open space is a very significant part of the value of our property. The applicant's appeal impairs those viewsheds and our property values and is particularly devastating to the Nuremberg property. The attorney's allegation that the Nuremberg's trees already obscure the view is without merit and is just not accurate. Allowing the reduced setback is unfair, not consistent with the county and the greenway's requirements, and if granted, provides a dramatic and unfair advantage to the applicants while damaging the three adjacent neighbors with setbacks that all exceed the 150 feet requirement. This is not a retribution issue. This is a fairness issue and is consistent with county regulations in the previous ruling. And finally, both the Nuremberg's comments and the CPO comments reflect the contrived rather than the essential nature of claiming the reduced setback is needed for fire safety and the drain field requirements. Obviously, neither is necessitated when the setback is 150 feet. Again, we respectfully request that the applicant setback be determined at 150 feet. I guess a couple of other comments that I would like to make is there was a statement about 50 tires being removed from the site. I sure would like to see those pictures. In the years past, my neighbor, Dale York, was elderly, and I often assisted him on projects around.
Just a moment. You know, 50 tires, whether they were there or not, is not the issue to me. It's the vegetation removal. And if I'm not looking for anyone to prove that that there were concrete or tires along the riverbank, honestly. So let's move on.
Thank you. My apology for including irrelevant information. I did not understand that.
I want to make sure everyone has an opportunity, including you, sir, to make statements to bring things to my attention that are relevant to their approval criteria.
And I think my previous testimony was relevant. And at this point, we have other members of the community who would like to speak.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. And I appreciate your participation today.
Okay, can you hear me?
I'm looking for...
Oh, I'm on the same line as Bill Kindermer.
Oh, and your name is?
So my name is Stephen Notman. My address is 21123 South Highway 99 East. I've been here, been a member of this community since 1992.
Mr. Notman, can you spell your last name, please?
Affirmative. N-O-T-M-A-N.
Thank you.
So I met Dean and Marlene last summer, and good morning. And I just hate what's going on with, this kind of problem within the neighborhood. And I do appreciate the hearings officer looking at this and hearing our testimony. So I'm a very simple man. I'm an electrical engineer, retired in 2005. As you can tell, I'm a very old person, and I've lived here for a long time. After retiring, I put together a small business. I build floating docks and gangways on the Willamette River, so I'm very familiar with the river. Been doing this for a long, long time. I have seen the results of banks being devegetated, and so that part concerns me. But this is pure and simple to me. And I'm only testifying because I would like to, and I think I've started to create a friendship with Dean and Marlene, and I want that to continue. And I want them to be part of this neighborhood. But one thing that it would be stupid of me not to give you my advice. And I believe my advice is important because of my experience. So putting a home 35 feet away from at the 100 foot setback level, according to Mr. Givens, would be reckless, in my opinion, and it would hurt Dean and Marlene in the future, because I know with my experience that bank has been devegetated, and unfortunately that the excavator guy did that, but it's a fact. It has been devegetated. And I love it that Dean and Marlene have replanted, and that's wonderful, but it will take several years for that replanting to restabilize that bank. If we put that home 35 feet away from that steep bank, I will tell you that it will slide. That'll hurt Dean and Marlene. It will hurt neighboring properties. And that's the only reason why I'm testifying. And so that's the issue. Nothing. not the size of the house, the size of the barn, the handy buyer. It's just simply where you place that home in relationship to that destabilized bank. Thank you.
I'll consider your comments, and thank you for expressing your concerns. And I appreciate your participation today, Mr. Notman.
Do I have to do anything wrong? Am I on?
And will you please introduce yourself, sir?
Yes, my name is Donald Narenberg. I own the property. Oh. I'm sorry, would you like me to spell it?
I have your letter, and so I have your spelling. So, but thank you, and provide your address, though.
Okay, I own the property at 21091 South Highway 99E, Oregon City. My mailing address is P.O. Box 13, Canby, Oregon, 97013. Like my friend, Mr. Notman, I'm a retired businessman, retired from owning a manufacturing company. I'd say my head is swimming right now. Applicant's attorney spent quite a little bit of time arguing about the merits of 705.04. I would just ask that the hearings officer look at the submittal that I did yesterday.
I certainly will.
Okay. And then I appreciate my friend Dean and the attorney trying to summarize my opposition. But again, I would just ask that you consider this middle that I made yesterday.
I will. And I've also reviewed the prior letter that you directly submitted and the copy of it that was attached to your neighbor's comments.
Okay. Thank you very much. And then, you know, I think I don't want to be redundant because I think I covered everything in my letter. The only thing that I would say is that there's been the accusation made that, that my opposition is somehow based on wanting to punish the Bergens for behavior upon the property. And it really has nothing to do with that. It's just simply that all of the homes immediately adjacent to them are set back well beyond 150 feet. And I just think that a new house ought to fit in with the development and not stick out like a sore thumb from it. And it's just simply that.
Just a moment. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your participation, and I will, as I stated, carefully review and consider the comments that you have made, the recent comment and the prior ones.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have additional members of the general public?
Yes. Can you see?
Hi.
Hi, I'm Tricia Boyd. I'm one of the neighbors, and my address is 21107 South Highway 99E, Oregon City.
And you said Tricia Boyd, B-O-Y-D, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, I think I read a comment that you provided, but I don't want to assume.
Okay, well, I just wanted to state that my concern isn't so much about the views. It is about the disregard that I saw that the applicants did to the riverbank. I am more concerned about the environment. And what has been done to the bank to replace, I think if we sent you a picture right now, you wouldn't agree that anything has been done to repair the bank. So I'm concerned about the environment and having neighbors that are concerned about the environment. That's my main concern. We've all been very conscious of the wildlife and taking care. And I'm concerned about what happened, what the Bergens did to the bank. And thank you for listening.
And thank you for your participation. And I also note that you made additional comments, something that wasn't brought up before, but was the effect largely on the wildlife in the area. So thank you for that. And I'll ask that other members of the general public seek to provide comments that are not repetitive to things that have happened before. If you have such a comment, you could just affirm that you agree with the prior statement or something to that effect. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Sherry McGinnis-Kennemer. I reside at 21041 South Highway 99E, Oregon City. And I'm the last one up, so and I'll keep my comments brief. And I think they're a little different than most what everyone else said.
And you're welcome to have your time.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I just want to make something really clear that Mrs. Bergen said, or Ms. Minister, I'm sorry, that the neighbors don't like him. I've never met either one of them, and so it's pretty unfair to say I don't like them. We want to be neighbors and friends. We live here. We love it here. She mentioned that this is going to be their dream home. This is our dream home. And it's really important to us that we have the view shed. And I think that's part of why we bought here. I know it's why we bought here. And we just love it here. And we want to continue that way. And we want to be friends with our neighbors. We're just hoping that it's fair. When this house was built, it had 150-foot setback. And our setback's 165. And it's in line with the other houses. And we just feel that going closer to the edge is detrimental to the view, to the Bergens themselves, because of the dangers it provides. I think in reading the CPO's testimony, which you should have received, that here's a third party that's not a neighbor that shares these kind of concerns. And I would hope that that would be taken seriously into consideration. And one other thing is the remediation of the devastation to the riverbank was only done after it was forced by code compliance. I do not believe that it was voluntary. This was going to be part of having the permits. And I don't have any proof as far as anything in writing, but I was in contact with code compliance, and that's what I was told. And I hope you'll take into consideration the views of the neighbors and appreciate the hearing and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate your participation. Thank you very much.
That's all from this side.
We have other members of the general public that have a hand up.
I don't see any more.
Okay. And Mr. Wilson, did you have any kind of closing statement that you'd like to make? I did receive, I don't think we covered new material in the commentary. It seems to track the written comments that we received. And I did receive some rebuttal from you that I think is going to cover it. As I said, I only received it this morning and I barely had an opportunity to skim it. If you have something to supplement it, you're welcome to take a few minutes here.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to be brief. So Mr. Sen was talking about access, and I think we covered that in our supplemental memorandum. That doesn't have anything to do with where the setback should be. So I'll leave that at that. Mr. Kinnemer, I think he was just reading his letter that he'd sent in. And so we addressed that letter in the supplemental memorandum. And it basically it sort of repeats the mistake that everyone thinks that there's a strict 150-foot setback and that you need something special to move it, when we sort of explained, actually, there's 100 to 150, and you have to figure out where it is. So I won't hit that any harder. And he just sort of repeats that, you know, they're worried about their views. And again, that's and a number of the other people, Ms. McGinnis, and the other people who testified were talking about their views. And that's understandable, but it's just not an approval criterion. And so I won't repeat myself on that anymore either. Let's see. Mr. Notman was talking about how it would be reckless to put the house that close to the river and that will slide. I think he said he was an electrical engineer, so I don't think he's an expert on that. Mr. Givens is. He explained how this is actually a very stable, safe place to put the house. There's plenty of room between this and the top of the bank. The only sort of worry about erosion was at the steep area by the riverbank, not where the house would be, whether it's at 100, 120, 150 feet. And Ms. Nirenberg talked about how it needs to fit in with the existing development. That's not an approval criterion either. And then just turning back to what Mr. Hanska talked about, and I couldn't tell if some of the other people were talking about retaliation or that kind of thing. I wasn't trying to be pejorative towards Mr. Hanska at all. I think what he did was totally understandable given the circumstances, but now they have fixed the problem. And the only area where there would be a problem was in that steep riverbank area. It's not going to affect the flatter grassy area. And so I think from what Mr. Hanska was talking about, it's clear that the county views that the way we do. You look at these factors. He talked about how it's a discretionary process and you try to figure out where between 100 and 150 feet to put it. If you adopt the interpretation urged by the Nirenbergs that you only look at subsection C and impose the maximum 150 all the time, I mean, that's going to upend the way the county is doing things. And I think that would cause a problem. And it's just, I don't think it's the right interpretation either. So we really get down to those five factors. Mr. Givens is the only expert who's discussed those. I don't think there's really any doubt that at least four of those factors weigh in our favor. The only one that we've had some real, conflicting evidence about is sort of the width of the river. As Mr. Hanska testified, I get this more like 700 feet, so it's a little wider than we thought. And as Mr. Givens talked about, the average is between 500 and 650 throughout the county. It's a little bit wider upstream, downstream. So, at worst, I think this would be a wash for us. It would, sort of equally balanced. So then you have four factors in our favor, one factor that's a wash, worst case for us. And so I think when you do that sort of balancing, it definitely weighs in favor of having the setback closer to the river. And so I'll just sort of conclude, this isn't about the Bergens wanting to maximize their views or to stick it to their neighbors or anything. They just want to build the house that they have designed. And so we've done some number crunching and talking to our architects and builders and stuff. And they think they can actually, with a few tweaks, fit this in with a 110-foot setback. So in the spirit of compromise and being reasonable and, balancing, they would be willing to agree to, they would be amenable to a 110-foot setback. That would be able to let them fit in their house. So they would be okay with that. So we want to just offer that out there as we conclude. So unless you have any questions, that'll conclude our presentation.
I don't. I thank you for your presentation and also your client's willingness to offer a compromise to help their neighbors accept their requested modification or the fact development is always hard. It's always hard to get a new neighbor and a new house and new property being developed. And thank you for reaching out to them in that way. Does the county have anything further to add before
Carl, could I make one comment before we kind of close?
I'd like to offer it to the county. Do you have something new or in addition to add? Sir?
Yeah, I think it's very substance. So one thing about the bank restoration, just to be clear, is in Steve's document, it requires an ongoing five years,
and you are responsible report to code compliance and get them to come out and inspect your property and maintain, and you'll have to replant things that die. And I understand your rebuttal here is that if you've planted stuff that's going to drown, you're just going to have to buy new stuff.
Right. Thank you.
I gotcha. Did I summarize it okay? I don't mean to cut you off, but I did read that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hanska, did you have something further?
Not unless you, Mr. Hearings Officer, have any questions or
I don't. I just want to make sure that when I give one person an opportunity to provide a closing statement or any, you know, further rebuttal of the information that was provided or statements or comments, that I provide a similar opportunity. It's the appearance of fairness.
I appreciate that. Thanks much. And I would just in turn thank the applicant, all the applicants' representatives, as well as folks who testified, and yourself. So thanks again.
Oops. Okay. I don't see any requests to keep the record open for additional submittals. I believe I received all of the exhibits that were submitted. Some may be not posted to Excella later. I'm not confident of the number. It seems like we have 38, but if that's not all that's posted, then whatever the right number is, I think, unless there's a written objection to the exhibits that are posted, send that to me and I'll sort it out. Otherwise, I'm going to close the record at this time. And thank you all for your participation. I will issue a written decision on this issue within 20 days.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time, Carl.
You too. Nice to meet you all. And thanks to all the members of the public as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks to you all. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.